Welcome to Barnyard Language, honest talk about running farms and raising families. We are Katie and Arlene, an Iowa sheep farmer and an Ontario dairy farmer, with six kids, two husbands, and a whole lot of chaos between us.
While this is a podcast for farm families, sometimes our content isn't for the whole family. So kick off your boots, reheat your coffee, and join us for some Barnyard Language.
Welcome to another episode of Barnyard Language. We've reached the part of the season where I'm now scared to ask, because a few weeks ago it was, I'd ask about lambs and there were none. And now I'm going to ask about lambs, and I bet Katie can probably not even count because they're coming fast and furious, aren't they?
We had seven ewes lamb this morning of the 38 ewes that we have. No, in the space of 2 hours this morning, seven ewes lambed. And I had to be involved in a number of them. We even reduced feed this year to try to keep our lamb sizes a little smaller, you know, to drop the birth weight a little bit. But with a fairly warm winter and really high quality hay, apparently cutting back grain was not enough. And a lot of our lambs are coming in at upwards of 10 pounds a piece. So 4 to 5 kilos plus for our non-American listeners. We anticipate all of our ewes having at least twins. We've had quite a few triplets, one set of quads. So we've got a lot of ewes with like 40 pounds of baby in there. And when babies get that big, they tend not to have the room to get out correctly, which then involves a lot of Katie climbing around, and I need to start exercising more at all, and lifting weights before next lambing season, because there were a few this morning that were...
It's not about getting summer ready. It's about getting lambing season ready, right?
No, to hell with the bikini body. I need a lambing body.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not worried about swimsuit season, but... Yeah, there were a few like feet braced against the wall kind of pulls this morning, and my feet, not the ewes' feet, but yeah, I stupidly took a shower this morning, thinking I would just, you know, shower and sit down at my desk and get to work at my quote unquote real job, and then I had to take a second shower, and now here I am.
Yeah. The lamb cams told you otherwise.
No, I thought I'd just wander out there and see what was happening. And there were just lambs everywhere. Just, we have a few I still haven't figured out who the mothers are, but as long as they're getting fed, it really doesn't matter.
So how do you make it work with your online job and flexibility? I know not everybody has the...
Possibly. I mean, besides the whole like... health insurance benefit. Probably the biggest benefit of my job is that it is very flexible. So I am able to just trot out there. I'm not normally gone for 2 hours at a crack. In 15 years of lambing, this is the first time that we've had that many go at once. But it snowed Friday and we had lambs all over the damn place Saturday, and then it snowed yesterday, and we have lambs all over the damn place again today. So, but generally, as long as my work gets done and I don't miss too many meetings and I post photos and cute videos, it's not generally a problem. Highly recommend.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's a lucky situation to be in for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is for sure. And thankfully, Jim had the day off today because he normally only works 4 days a week at his off-farm job, but he was hauling cattle to the sale barn this morning. So he's out there now, and I'm back in the house doing my work, making the money.
And sneaking in a podcast update, too.
And sneaking in a podcast update, yeah. One thing I did think was funny was I posted some videos to our work Slack, and, you know, Slack automatically adds a transcript. But apparently Slack thinks that my sheep speak Korean and added a Korean language transcript to my video.
Nice. What were they saying?
Something about life. I don't know. It only transcribed a few words before it gave up.
Sure. Yeah.
I didn't know my sheep were that talented.
Lambs just kind of yell one or two words, right?
Yeah, they really do.
I guess, in Korean.
So, Arlene, I have to ask, why do you look so damn fancy?
Oh, I left the house today.
For, you know, if you want to see how fancy Arlene looks, you can join Patreon, and then you'll be able to see us.
Yeah, you can join Patreon now, because we just found out the other day, in technical world, we always end up with a few little glitches. We thought we were recording video, even though for the most part, we don't share video, because then we might have to, you know, like, wear real clothes, and clean up our houses or something, or we don't always assume that our guests want video shared. So anyway, most of the time, if we're recording, our video's on. We thought that we were recording it on the software that we have, but we turned that setting off one time, probably because somebody had some rural internet issues and we thought that was helpful and never turned it back on. So sorry, Patreon people. You'll be getting video again this week. Yeah, it's not that exciting. I just had a doctor's appointment, so I thought I'd put on like a nice shirt instead of the usual hoodie. So not that fun.
Do you ever get people, one of our neighbors said this once very loudly at a pancake fundraiser, but when people see you out dressed in normal clothes, do they say things like, I've never seen you with clothes on, because they mean
nice clothes,
real clothes. But yeah, one of our neighbors did that to me out in public. It was like,
not really, but my kids have definitely said before, if they see me with makeup in that accusatory tone, like, where are you going? Because that does not happen very often. Definitely. And you know, when they have those, you know, update your mascara, you know, once every however many months, it's like, well, if you only use it once every 2 or 3 months, can I keep it for a little bit longer? Because then it's almost like a single use product instead of something that you can keep around.
They really ought to make a, like, if anyone uses this idea, I expect some sort of kickback or like influencer situation. They ought to make single-use makeup for farmers or other folks who wear makeup and do the sort of jobs where you don't wear makeup very often. There's a lot of them.
Yeah, I feel like they – remember, was it like Avon or like one of those like makeup – you know, like the home parties had those like little tiny lipsticks. And they think they probably did, but yeah, they don't really sell them because that would – maybe the markup is not high enough or something. But yeah, that would be handy because, yeah, by the time I actually get around to using a whole container of something, about 25 years has gone by and you're probably not supposed to use it anymore.
Sorry, folks. It's been a real long day already. I'm very ready for a nap.
That's okay. I'll do my quick update and then we'll move on to our guest.
Okay. Yes. How are things at your house, Arlene?
Things are fine. The big weekend excitement, two things. I went to another jigsaw puzzle competition. I can't remember if I told everybody before, but my sister Maid and I, who has been on the podcast, our local library did a puzzle competition a little while ago, and we dominated. And so they were running another one this weekend, and so we signed up again, and we won again. So I don't want to brag too much, but we kicked the butts.
Y'all, I have to interrupt. Last year when I visited Arlene for Maida's birthday, I got to see Arlene and her two sisters work on a jigsaw puzzle, and it is a terrifying demonstration of puzzling prowess. Like, I like me a good jigsaw puzzle, and there's no way in hell I was going to get in the middle of that. It's
the hands were flying.
They take it seriously. Yeah. So
after the last one, actually, a friend messaged because I posted about it, and she said, do you know about the National Puzzle Competition? It's in Ontario, which is the province that we live in, and she sent me the link, and the registration was like 3 days from then, and I thought, it's a sign. So I just went ahead and signed us up because I was like, why not go to Nationals? So that's coming up in early May. So this time we were working on our time, and so we signed up both for the pairs competition, her and myself, and then the team competition, which is a four person. So the pairs is a 500 piece puzzle. And so on Sunday afternoon, we did our 500 piece puzzle in 31 minutes, which was flying pretty fast. It wasn't, I will say, it was an easier picture than some I have done before, just because of the way the coloring and everything was. But yeah, we're feeling confident, verging on cocky, but that's fine. It's just puzzles.
Do all the teams get the same puzzle then? Or how does that work in?
Yeah, so everybody gets the same puzzle and you flip them all over at the same time and you just get timed.
I like the idea that it might be a...
So the national one is sponsored by Ravensburger, so the... And I think you get the puzzle at the end of the day, too.
I'm picturing like a bracket system, you know, like it's March Madness here right now, you know, for basketball. But it would be like the next step up would be like one of those puzzles where it's one color all over, you know, maybe like different shades, but it's just.
Yes. Or yeah. Or a two-sided one. Those ones are evil where it's like one picture on one side, one on the other.
And then like the third step would be a cat or a cat and a child. Like as you go up in the bracket, you know, you'd have to.
Yeah, that's right. A little bit of an earthquake. And...
one piece hidden somewhere in the auditorium that you'd have to go find.
Yeah, that's right. The other weekend excitement was that our Holstein Association always does a day of spring tours. So the neighboring county, it was their turn to host. And so there were 7 farms on the map. And so you do kind of a day where you just go and visit all the farms. And so they have gotten things tidied up and there's lots of snacks, which is important to me. And you get to see lots of different people and go visit all the farms. So we went on a bit of a road trip and hit all 7 farms in, I think, about 5 hours time, which was pretty impressive. Had to try all of the different treats and chili and all the snacks that everybody had. And of course, see cows too.
Say, who was your designated driver for this, Arlene? Because I saw a Vod Cow was there.
Vod Cow did have some samples at one of the farms, but I think that was, there were maybe only a couple that had had alcohol as an offering. But yeah, my husband was the driver this time because he knew where everybody was. I mean, you could use a GPS, but especially on those farm roads, they're not always quite as reliable as you want them to be. But yeah, it was a fun day. And it was the perfect temperature because it was sunny and kind of nice, but just enough below freezing that you weren't going to get stuck in anybody's yard. Because it can this year also be that situation where if it's above freezing and you've got too many people in your farmyard, then you could have a situation where you need to have a tractor on standby to be pulling people out. So it all worked out perfectly.
Yeah, I'm wondering, our neighboring Sugarbush does a big pancake feed every year. And the first pancake day will be this Saturday and then next Sunday. And with the fact that it is snowed repeatedly and then it's warming up, I'm guessing they will have a tractor on standby as they frequently do for town folks parking generally too close to the edge of the ditch because people just park, you know, out on the road. And folks do tend to get enthusiastic about how close to the edge they can park.
Yes. Yeah. Just sneak over a little bit too far.
Yeah. Yeah. It was... Priuses are not really made for the off-road spring Iowa usage.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, why don't we go ahead and introduce our guest for this week, and you can hopefully get something to eat and maybe go back out and check on some babies.
Yep. I've got my eye on a couple more, so we're ready for it.
Today, we're excited to be talking to Lexi Wright, who's joining us from Kansas, and we get to color another state in our map because you're our first Kansas guest. So, Lexi, welcome to the podcast. We always start each of our interviews with the same question, so our listeners know this one, and this is your way to introduce yourself to all of them. So we always ask, what are you growing? So that can be crops and kids and livestock and all kinds of other stuff. So, Lexi, what are you growing?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I love this question because I could answer it like 100 different ways, I feel like. We have cow-calf farm, and then we have a few, like 70 acres of row crops that we did corn last year, and we have planted to wheat this year. And then we are getting ready to grow some of our more like homesteady activities. We're getting our chickens going here. We moved here to the farm in August of last year. So we are getting things kind of reset up and growing our chicken flock. We just got our first milk cow and getting ready to start our garden here. So lots of things in that way. That's like my hobby of things that I take on for absolutely no reason. And we have 4 kids. So raising them. And then also my husband and I both have our own business. So we're focusing on growing businesses too and figuring out how the farm fits into that picture as well.
That is a lot of different things. So just so we have context for people, not that you need exact numbers, but about how many are we talking about in terms of cow-calves or like what are you looking at in terms of your livestock numbers?
Yeah, we're like 40 to 50 cows ranging. And then that's kind of where we started out when we came here, and we're getting ready to make some expansions. We just have to decide what we want to do. That's been the hardest thing in this season is figuring out like how to best use everything that's here at the farm and make it work for what we want to do. So we're excited to tackle that.
For sure. And I know chicken math is always tricky, but how many do you think you have right now?
So I actually don't have any at this very moment because a stinking raccoon got the four that I brought with me from our old farm. But my new chickens are on their way, actually. And I'm getting, I think, 20 layers, and then we're going to do like 25 broilers this year. So
nice. And what ages of kids are we talking about growing here?
My oldest is 7, and he's a boy. And then I have another son who is getting ready to turn 6. And then my third one is a girl. She is 4. And then my youngest is also a girl, and she just turned 3. I have to think about it for a minute because they always talk about their next birthday. So they're like, I'm going to be 5. And I'm like, okay, but wait, they're still this age still.
Yeah. And they're always changing.
Lexi, my daughter keeps telling us about how she's almost 8. She turned 7 in December. And it was like 2 weeks after her birthday, she started being almost 8. Like,
yep.
We could settle into this age for a little while, right?
So close.
Lexi, I will admit I Googled you last night because that's the sort of preparation I normally do. There's a lot of people out there with the name Lexi Wright, and most of them are like hardcore college sports stars or professional athletes, soccer players, softball players, lacrosse players, rowers. I mean, like a lot of very athletic people. So I'm wondering if you are somewhere in that list of very athletic people, because obviously I didn't look at dates on all of them, or if you're just, you know, one of us. Arlene's pretty athletic. She's a pretty aggressive broom hockey player.
I did not.
Ball hockey, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I played ball hockey and hurt myself last year. That's how aggressive I was.
Oh, no. That's not good. I did not know that that was like a name of athletes. I am not an athlete. My husband tells me that I am a real athlete sometimes in a very sarcastic voice. But I ran cross country in high school, and that is about the extent of my athleticism.
As the parent of 2 kids who are pretty close in age, I would say that having little ones who are close together is athletic enough to count for sure. So where did you grow up and what's your background like?
Yeah, I grew up in central Kansas, and that's where we are now, just not quite as far north as I grew up. I was basically on the Nebraska line where I grew up. I grew up on a hobby farm. My dad worked for the Soil Conservation Service, so I like was around ag and farm things and wildlife things from a really young age, but we didn't have any kind of farm animals until I turned 12, and I got a horse for my birthday that I had begged and like worked my tail off to renovate our barn for. And that was like our first interaction with livestock. Well, my mom had grown up on a farm when she was young, but so she'd been around it before. But for me, it was the first. And then I was blessed to have several bottle calves like throughout junior high and high school that my uncle would bring us sometimes when he had them. So yeah, I did that. And then I did FFA in high school. I loved FFA. I'd say that was really well where I fell in love with agriculture. I had the best ag teacher in the entire world, and you cannot convince me that there's a better one. And she played like such a huge role in my life. I went to K-State and studied fruit and vegetable production there and animal science, mainly because of her influence on me. And then my husband and I met there, and we both took like ag-related jobs after college and settled down in central Kansas. We've moved around a couple times for jobs and started trying to grow our own farm after we got married. So.
And are you taking over your husband's family farm then?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting story. So we actually were married here at his grandma's farm. He is would be the sixth generation, but we bought the farm from her last year. She's 91 years old, and she moved to town last year so that we could live in the house at the farm. We kind of hoped that she would stay and enjoy the chaos with us, but she did not. She wanted to move to town, and I don't blame her. It's a lot quieter. But we bought the farm and have been kind of making it our own and seeing what things we want to carry on from its vast history. Our kids will be the seventh generation here if they have any interest in continuing it. So we're just trying to build, kind of set the stage for that the best that we can.
So as someone who married into my kids are the fifth generation on the family farm, and same deal that my in-laws moved out so we could move in. And I was thinking this weekend about how unusual in a normal American society it is to have to deal with things like, oh, I want to rip out the shrub in my yard. Is my mother-in-law going to be pissed? If I paint the dining room, is someone going to be mad? Like, I'm wondering what your experience has been like with that. Because it's, I mean, my in-laws are great, but there's still a, like, you kind of get that look. And I'll admit that I do actively troll my mother-in-law so that when I do change something, she's like, well, I mean, you know, like, we're getting our house painted this year, and I'll say things like, I'm going to paint it hot pink, so that then anything I do that's not hot pink is less offensive.
That's hilarious and such a good strategy too. There's been some of that, but it's kind of interesting. Again, none of my husband's family actually grew up in the home. His grandma was born here, and then they lived in other homes, and then she moved back to the farm after her kids were grown. And so none of them lived here, so they don't have like as many strong emotional ties to the decor in the home. Although they did do a lot of renovation here. They put up wallpaper, which I don't know if you can see behind me, is like very floral. That'll be changing soon.
I was admiring it. It feels very on brand for family homes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in a farmhouse that my husband's grandmother moved out of, and every room was floral wallpaper. And most of them also had a border. So it was like a different floral from, you know, like from the floor to mid wall, and then a border paper, and then more floral from that midpoint up. So I hear you on the lots of wallpaper.
Yeah.
The room my son is in now, my mother-in-law did an excellent job on the downstairs, but they had not gotten to the upstairs yet. When we moved in, and the room that my son is in had navy blue with cream and pink flowers that were seriously like dinner plate size metallic wallpaper. It was a look. My mother-in-law did not install that wallpaper. I want to make that very clear. That was not her choice, but
that was another generation's choice.
Yeah. It was a look.
Yeah. There's varying stages of kind of outspoken wallpaper in the house. Some of them are like, there's some grapes in the kitchen. There's this floral. There's a really pretty floral actually in the room my kids have now. And then in my husband and I's bedroom, there's like a pink that is like Hawaiian palm leaf pattern. That one's unique.
Very Kansas.
Yeah, when I think Kansas, I think pink with Hawaiian palm leaves, for sure.
Oh yeah, yeah. Maybe they were looking for a retreat from the winter weather. I don't know. But they even wallpapered some of the ceilings, so that's interesting.
Then you always wonder, what were they covering up, right? Like, if I take this off, is it going to fall down on me?
Good question. The home needs a lot of renovations, so we are looking forward to doing those. Nobody had been living in the upstairs for at least 20 years, I believe. So it's in pretty disrepair. So we're actually only living in the downstairs of the home right now while we prepare to renovate up there and get that all rearranged. There's a lot more family attachment, I think, to the outbuildings than to the actual inside of the home. So that has been interesting. When we moved here, we actually built a shop, like a machine shed. And there were some feelings about placement of that and how that all was going to fall in.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And I know that transition stories are so different between farms and families and relationships and all that kind of stuff. So it's not always easy to give advice necessarily, but are there things that you learned during this transition time that you would want to share with other people? Things that you think maybe if you had known going in, or that someone else might get something out of if they're going into a situation that's similar?
Yeah. Well, and I'm the daughter-in-law in this situation. So I'm the outsider looking in at the situation. But my husband's dad has, there's 10 kids in their family. And that caused there to be a lot of just avoidance of the subject of what was going to happen to the farm when grandma was ready to move to town. Because there's no good way to divide a farm 10 ways or to figure that out. So honestly, when we asked if we could buy the farm, I don't think many of them had even considered what the next steps were at that point. And that caused a lot of, I won't say challenges, because our farm transition was very smooth and very quick compared to what it could have been. From the time that we asked if we could buy the farm to the time that we bought the farm was about 6 or 8 months. So very short. But during that time, a lot of like the emotions that everyone was processing was like, well, maybe I had thought that I was going to live there if it was like somebody in the previous generation, or maybe I thought I was going to retire there and like make the home into a bed and breakfast and things like that, that just kind of bubbled up that just hadn't been considered before because they'd never taken the time to think about what was next. So I would say, if I could give any advice, it would be if you're tied into a farm, assume at some point that it will change hands and that you should probably think about what that will look like before the day that it happens. And the other thing I think is just to be clear about, like, over communicate how you're feeling. I think a lot of times in families, we maybe assume somebody feels a certain way, or we think about, they said this one time 5 years ago, and so that's how they still feel, those kinds of things. So just trying to be communicative in how you feel and let other people know where you're at is just really helpful, so nobody has those misunderstandings.
We're also in the buying the farm from the family camp, and I think it does help a lot with the whole, like, well, I was going to take over the farm because mom loves me best. She was going to leave it to me, you know, and having the chance to do it when it's a choice for everyone involved instead of when it's grandma has to go to the home this week. How are we going to pay for it? Can be really helpful. But I think people forget too that normally, I guess, when you buy a house, you don't have to like have Thanksgiving dinner with the sellers later. And if people are pissed, you don't have to like see them for every Super Bowl party or whatever, you know, like it's a whole different dynamic when you're buying from family. And there's always that, is the price fair? Is the price fair to the people who are buying it? How's that money going to get split? Is it going to pay for grandma to go to the home? And I've never been so glad to be an only child as I have been since we started talking about farm transition so much, because at least it's more straightforward.
Definitely. My mom's family actually is in the middle of going through a transition. My grandma passed away a year and a half ago. And she was the owner of the farm, and they're trying to transition it to my uncle, but she had 6 kids. So also not simple. And she did a lot of the transition planning. Like, she had worked with a lawyer. She had done the things that they tell you to do, and it's still really hard. So there's just not like a simple way to do it, and there's so many personalities involved. I think that being really open with folks is the best thing you can do. And it's so sad to me to see like siblings fighting and like never talking to each other again, or being upset at Thanksgiving dinner, like you said, over that kind of stuff. But it's kind of inevitable. I think there's always going to be somebody who doesn't get exactly what they wanted. And the more that the previous generation can prepare folks for what things are going to look like, the better.
Yeah, definitely. I know as farming parents, we often talk about the word legacy, which I think is a lot of what we're talking about here, and what it means to to create a legacy or to leave a legacy for your kids, are there things that you're already thinking about now, especially knowing what you know that you are working on actively to build that legacy or to at least be aware of that as a thing that you're working towards?
Yeah, I like this question because it gets me to talk about things that like I usually don't talk about. The thing that I think we're doing the most right now to prepare for that legacy is just working. And that, I mean, as I thought about this question, I was like, well, we're trying to do a lot of things. We're trying to like think ahead about how we build things and how we organize things to make it make sense for the future and, you know, be able to be taken different ways if our kids want to do something slightly different than what we do or something like that. But the biggest thing we're doing right now is my husband and I are both just trying to make sure that we have financial security to be able to do the things we want to do to pass the farm on to the kids. The farm has been purchased at every transition in this family. And we, our goal is to not have to make our kids buy the farm. That's our goal. So right now, it'd be really nice for us to not both work off farm jobs and farm and have a business on top of that. But to us, it's more important at this point that we just make sure we have the means that we need to be able to pass it on to the kids. So working our tails off right now is the legacy. And I hope our kids are see that. We try to really prioritize family time and things like that too. But at the end of the day, they will definitely know that mom and dad worked for where we're at, hopefully.
It feels like too that I don't feel like there's ever been the same focus on women leaving a legacy as there has been on men. You know, you're passing on the family name, you have to have an heir to the fortune or the farm or whatever. And I know as someone who has also spent a lot of the last couple of years thinking about what I'm leaving my kids and what I want to be remembered for, it's been really interesting to really like think about that and really beyond just we did our best and here's the farm and it's really far in debt and everything's falling apart and here's your legacy. Good luck, kids. You know, about really actively planning what we want to have happen instead of it just being well, everybody's dead, figure it out, kind of, you know, let's fight it out at the funeral lunch sort of a thing.
Gosh, isn't it interesting that that's always been, like, I don't know what it is about farmers that they're just like, yeah, I'll be dead so you guys can figure it out. Like, that's such a, I don't know. It's just something about the farmer personality that I guess they always did it that way or continue to do it that way. I think it's only like 3% or something of farms actually have a transition plan or a succession plan that they're actively planning. So yeah, that's still happening, unfortunately. And it's just completely crazy to me in this time where we have access to information and we're trying to do things better. And, you know, we've seen at this point what transitions can look like and how farms can be lost because of that. So it's like, why would we ever choose that way knowing that it fails so often?
Well, I think maybe, you know, too, like my husband's grandfather was born here and was one of 12 kids and they all lived within, you know, 2 miles of the farm. So when it came time to transition, there were plenty of people to do the work and everybody was about equally invested and it was still a shit show as to who was taking over. But, you know, now that you've got maybe 3 kids and 2 of them live in California and have their own lives and, you know, they want the money and not the land, which is totally reasonable and acceptable. And I understand why families, when people who are actively farming get so hurt by people who live off farm wanting the money out of it. But you can't really blame them for it, you know. But it is, yeah, it's really irresponsible of folks, I think, to just say, well, you guys can figure it out when I'm dead. Like, well, it's okay for you because you'll be dead. But the rest of us are still going to be stuck here trying to figure this out.
Yeah. In a time when we would love to be celebrating your life and remembering you, we're all going to be worried about what tomorrow has in store.
We're talking about what a jackass you were. Like, you bring that on yourself, whatever.
True. But,
you know, the last thing they should be worrying about is, you know, the bank wants their payments on time and they really don't care about funerals or fighting it out over who's keeping what.
Yeah.
Podcasts are free to listen to, but they aren't free to create. Katie and I would appreciate your support as we work to build the Barnyard Language community.
Patreon is an easy way for you to make a contribution that goes directly to making the show. As a member of our Patreon community, you get to watch the video version of our weekly updates, complete with questionable hairstyles and clutter. With three levels of support, you can choose a tier that works for you.
Keep the podcast going by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/barnyardlanguage.
So, you and your husband both have off-farm jobs. My husband and I both have off-farm jobs. How do you make it work, especially with four little ones? And grandma moving to town so that she wouldn't just be home baking cookies and chasing children all day. Although it would have kept her young and she should have appreciated it more.
Well, she is 91, so I can't say I blame her for, and with 10 of her own kids, I can't blame her for wanting a little peace and quiet in her old age.
Yeah, you might babysit your grandkids, but great grandkids, I think you just get to watch them from a distance.
Yeah. She does love, absolutely love when any of the grandkids come and great grandkids come to visit, though. It's, you can tell, just makes her day. But how do we make it work? I want to be totally vulnerable here and say a lot of days we don't. It absolutely sucks. And it's really hard some days. And we feel like we did 100 different things and we failed at 100 of them.
How do you deal with, presumably because you own your own business, right? Dealing with having a job that you enjoy, I think, adds a whole new level of stress too, because it's not just like a 9 to 5, I'm out of here, you know, good luck suckers, I'll see you tomorrow kind of thing.
I'm so glad you said that. Yeah. It does add a whole other piece to it. So I think a few things that we have found that work for us to try to make things easier and more manageable, for me has just been releasing a lot of things of like, well, it should be this way, or this is how I was raised and how my parents did it. And so that's how, obviously how I know to do it, but that if that's not working in the moment, we have to find something else that does and not feel guilt that we're like doing it wrong or doing it different or anything like that. My mom was really big on sitting down for supper as a family every single night when I was a kid. And in this season of life, that does not work for us. I wish that it did more often than it does, but it doesn't. I also have really picky eaters. So I sometimes make 4 different meals for supper. And honestly, that to me is easier than dealing with kids who don't eat their supper and then are hungry at bedtime. And they're stubborn too. So it's like, it's not one of those things where like, oh, I'll starve you out and you'll eat a good breakfast tomorrow. No, they'll just be picky and then get sick. And like, it's a whole cycle. But so like doing things like that, that work for us, even if it's like something that maybe a grandparent would say, oh, you're spoiling those kids or whatever. If it works in this season for us, we're just going to do it and move on and not feel any guilt about it. Something else I would say that helps us balance a little bit is, again, I'll say communication. That's something my husband and I really feel like is a strength of ours, is that we communicate a lot. Not just about like our day-to-day things of who's going where and doing what, but of like what's important to me that happens this week, even if it's not on the schedule or something that I care about, things like that. And we try really hard to stay on the same page. In everything. As far as just managing it in general, though, I think the biggest thing that helps us is that we have like a purpose or a goal that we're working towards. And that makes it seem worth it when it's really crazy hectic. Like I'm thinking about, you know, my really busy season in my business, I'm in marketing. So it's really busy in Q4 as everybody tries to finish the year strong. And then in Q1, as everybody tries to have a great start to the year. that also happens to be a busier time for us on the farm as we calve in the fall and then we harvest in the fall. And we also moved in the fall this past year. So it's like, what the heck did we do to ourselves as we dove into this? It's been honestly completely insane this year. But the fact that we know what we are working towards and the goal that we have, and it, we do see ourselves making progress to that. I think that's the other piece of it, is like we pay attention to the things that we're accomplishing along the way, even if they're small, even if it seems really little, we're paying attention to those so that it doesn't feel like we're just not getting anywhere and spinning our wheels. But I think, yeah, I don't have really good answers for that one because it's a daily struggle. So
that's all right. That's the reality, right? I mean, if there was a secret bullet, you know, secret ingredient that you could share, I mean, everyone would be doing it, right? But it is, it's just hard. And when you've got young kids and you're working your butt off, then that's the reality, is that not every day is going to be going smoothly. And there's too many, you've got too many balls in the air, and, you know, a sick kid or a sick cow is all it takes to throw the whole day or week off.
Yeah.
I do think, Lexi, with kids that are about the same age as your oldest kiddo, 6 to 7 for at least my two children, who clearly represent all the children in the world, has been a real turning point in the level of terror I feel about their decision-making ability. Like, I still don't trust them because they're still little kids, and that's why little kids have parents. But they can be told to go get dressed and come back with at least some clothing on, or I can run out to the barn and be fairly sure that they'll be alive if I come back 10 minutes later. You know, like, it's not, I wouldn't trust them further than I can throw them, but they're at least starting to be humans. And I feel like once they get to be humans, at least the, like, the stress about their actual physical safety being left alone in your living room is better. I mean, obviously then they start driving and they start going places, and like, that's, I'm just refusing to think about it. But at least you're past that, like, are they going to go up one step and fall and break their necks age of childhood?
Yeah. No, I definitely feel like that. I feel like we are, my younger two are in the very danger zone still. And they are, my girls are, I don't know what word you want to use for it. They have the mind of their own. And if they decide that we were left with the boys to stay inside and watch TV for 10 minutes while mom went out to the barn to do something and we don't want to stay in the house, they're just going to like get dressed and put their coats on and go outside and find us. And it's like, not great. But yeah, the older ones, I do have a lot more sense of safety, or like if something, like they can figure something out if they need to figure things out, which is nice. I did want to go back and answer the part B of your question about when you have a job that you love, how that plays into it too. I kind of forgot to say that. Since I own my own business, I own a marketing agency that I started, I don't know really when I started it. I've been doing it since college off and on, but I went full time in it about 5.5 years ago. And I love what I do. I absolutely love it. It's like, it drives me. I'm kind of a workaholic because of it. And that does make it really hard to balance, the farm and the things that need done on the farm and kids and knowing what my priorities should be, because I constantly have this nagging in the back of my head of like, oh, but I have this project that I really want to get done, or I really want to see go well. And so just balancing those priorities is hard. And that's not at all the path that I thought I would be on as a mom. Like I just assumed I would be a stay-at-home mom. That's what my mom was for a good portion of my life. And that's what I thought I would be. And to have that not be what I ended up wanting is kind of like constantly something that I have to check myself for and be like, no, these are my actual priorities because I'm me and this is how our life works, not guilting myself because I'm doing things a little bit differently than what I thought I would be doing them like.
Yeah, it's really interesting to think about the stories we tell ourselves, right? In terms of our parenting and, you know, our parents were just doing their best in the time and the place that they were in, right? But then I know that I have at times thought to myself, oh, well, that's not how I was raised, or what would my mom think? And I mean, she's still here on earth with me. So like, I'm sure that if I asked her, she'd be like, give yourself a break. You know, like, you don't have to do it the same as me. Like, I'm sure that I am most of the time holding myself to a different standard than she would or anyone else would, right? Like, you have expectations of yourself that you really don't need to meet. And they come from lots of different places, whether it's our own upbringing or looking at other parents and thinking, oh, well, they're doing it better or worse, and you know, like, and I should be able to do this or that. But yeah, we have to look at what's really important and the kids that we have and the place that we're living in, and our own personality too.
Lexi, I can say we've done more than 100 interviews now, and one thing that's helped me a lot is to think, you know, like, if a friend was judging herself the way I judge myself, would I tell her to stop being an obnoxious perfectionist pain in the ass? Or would I be like, yeah, you kind of suck? And I have to say that of all the people we've interviewed, I don't think we've talked to anybody yet where my impression of them was, you could really be doing better, you know? And I would even say so. Like, I wouldn't name names, but I would say so if I thought we had talked to anyone who could be doing a little more. And it's, I want to know though, your kids are obviously the same age, because you don't, does your husband leave the house for his job?
Okay. So that is a complicated question, because he does and he doesn't. He is a field adjuster for an ag insurance company. And so he works from home, but he goes and like inspects damage to farm equipment and things like that to get those insurance claims adjusted. He does potentially have to go on storm deployments now. It's something new that's been added to his job, which would be a 2-week period, potentially a couple times a year that he would be gone. And this is very new information to us. So we're trying to figure out what that will look like for our farm. I am not a great equipment operator, and that is something that we need to do to feed our cows every day, or at least every other day.
And it wouldn't be a planned, like, this is a business trip, I'm going to be away. It's more like there was a storm in this place and you have to go, right? So it's not something you can necessarily plan for.
Yeah, we do know the time frames that he's like on call for them, but yeah, it's 2 weeks is a long time for me to try to run the farm by myself and solo parent. But so we're trying to navigate what that will look like. But for now, he has a job where he works at home and then just like travels, not every day, but most days to inspect insurance claims.
Sure.
So do your kiddos have any understanding of the fact that you do work? And that you working at home still counts as work that has to be done?
I don't know. I know they didn't used to understand. They just thought that mommy went back home after dropping them off at daycare or school.
You just eat snacks and play video games all day, right?
Yeah.
That's what I do too. Don't tell our kids, Arlene.
They would notice sometimes when I'd clean the house, like really thoroughly, they'd be like, oh, mom, wow. And I'd be like, thank you. That's what I did today. But I think that there's a couple of things that I've been doing in the past year where I will like travel for work. So I have to drop them off early, or my husband will have to pick them up or something when I go like on video shoots and things like that. And so I've started telling them more like about what I do for that. I'll be like, okay, well, we're going to go film a commercial today in this place. And I think that has made them understand a little bit more that I work. It's much easier for them to understand it when I leave the house to do something versus when I stay home.
I know I said something to my kids the other day about, you know, there was kind of one of those, mommy, I need this, mommy, I need this. And I finally said, mommy does not work here. As in, you know, mommy is not actually a waitress or whatever. And my son pipes up and he goes, but you do work here, mommy. You have an office. That's where you work. And it's like, well, yes, I do work here.
I don't work for the two of you.
Yes, I don't work for you. You are not writing my paycheck.
Yeah, you're not paying me.
But I mean, Arlene, I'm wondering, obviously your kids are older and hopefully by now they know what you do. But I'm wondering if it was easier to explain to them that although you didn't leave, I mean, you walked out the door and went to the barn and milked cows, which is a pretty concrete sort of a thing.
Yeah, I mean, we're doing more concrete, not just, you know, something on a computer where they don't really know what's happening on the other side of that, right? But I mean, although when, you know, like my husband does the farm books and the office is in the middle of the house, and you know, when they were little, there was a baby gate that barricaded that spot off because little hands wanted to always be on the keyboard and we didn't have like an office space with a door. So, I mean, there were definitely conversations around, you know, like this is, you know, like this is how we're paying the bills. And, you know, like the things on the computer are for that, or, you know, seeing him write checks or those types of things that, I mean, we don't write as many checks anymore, but that kind of work when they were still around, I suppose. Yeah, you're still having those kinds of conversations.
Arlene, I'm going to add one more question and then we can move on. Lexi, I know for myself, you know, I work from home in an off-farm job, which I think is the other thing to clarify to farm folks that I, you know, I work from home, but it's not farming. I have a job with an employer who expects me to be at places at times. What have you found that helps you transition from the work brain to the kid brain? Because I know that has been, I mean, I'm 5 years in on this job and I feel like I'm starting to get some handle on being prepared for my family to come home when they do come home at the end of the day, you know? So I'm wondering what your experience has been like with that. And if you have any hot tips for the rest of us.
I definitely struggle with that still. It's really hard for me to shut off work brain, especially now where like it's on our phone. We see the notifications roll in of emails coming through and things. And I do a lot of work on social media too. So it's like, even if I'm trying to relax and unwind and see what everybody was up to today on Facebook, like I'm getting pinged with work stuff at the same time. So I do struggle with that. I used to struggle with it a lot worse when I was like newer in taking my business full time. I didn't stop working. Like I was working all the time and I got pretty burnt out about that and kind of hit a breaking point. And that's actually when I started hiring employees. And that was a big change for me, which is a little different than like a job for an employer. But just taking that step to recognize that I don't have to do everything. Like I'm allowed to have help, and that counts in every area of life, not just my business. Like if I need help with housework, I'm allowed to get help. Like I don't have to feel bad about that. So doing that is good. The thing that I've been doing recently since we moved here, our schedule has changed a lot because we're in a different school, different daycare. And so adapting to that was kind of difficult. I used to be able to work from 7:30 to 4:30 every day. Now I work from about 8 until 3 when I go pick up my school age kids, and then they're home until I go pick up my daycare kids at 4:30. And so my workday got shortened, and then I also had some of the kids at home for the end of the workday, and it's just like a little bit weird. But I started going outside without my phone. Like I just would turn off notifications or whatever for a little bit. And go do some of the chores that I usually wait until the evening to do. And that kind of helped me to have a break in the day to transition between the two. So I would go, you know, feed or water the horses or the bulls that are up close to the house and just try to get some sunshine in. It's a lot more pleasurable to do that when it's nice weather out versus cold weather. But even in the cold, it's like a shock to your brain and your body of like, okay, now we're doing something different. This is a different priority. I used to work a lot in the evening and I just don't anymore. I just really try to tell myself, you know, it can get done tomorrow. And if it doesn't get done tomorrow, then I need to make a change in how I manage my work. So
I know I've found the bare minimum for myself is to set an alarm on my phone that consistently goes off at least half an hour before they come home. Because otherwise, like, I would find myself still elbows deep in my work, like way focused in on it. and I'd hear the door open. I'd be like, I haven't cooked supper. I'm still like, I've got meeting notes open everywhere and I've got, you know, stuff everywhere. And my brain is, you know, it takes time to get from one to the other. But I'd agree that I love being able to go out and, you know, do a few chores or putz around a little and kind of get back in the human realm of things.
I suppose in your case, Katie, it is a bit different because you're not the one physically going to pick them up. So you don't have that transition point of even the car ride being like, I'm going to put on my music or my podcast or whatever. And this is, you know, pour yourself a coffee or something for the drive and have those minutes of the drive to daycare with.
Jim has been very helpful in letting me know, especially if he's leaving work earlier and picking the kids up earlier, because otherwise my alarm goes off and I think I still have half an hour or 45 minutes. And then 4 minutes later, the door opens. I'm like,
right. And then they pull in.
Not right now, you guys.
Like, yeah, that's right. I needed those last 20 minutes.
Yeah. I feel like the 50s TV show dad who has to, like, you know, the wife brings him his slippers and his pipe and the newspaper at the end of the day so he can unwind.
Yeah, that's right. So not that we're looking for free advice, but since you've told us that you work in marketing, if we have listeners who are trying to market their farm business to their local community or to a wider audience, even if they have a broader reach than their local community, what are some of your starting off tips for people who maybe have limited time or money to spend on the marketing side of their business, but are trying to get themselves out there in terms of selling what they're growing?
Yeah, I actually teach a class on this. So the answers came really easily for this. I'll give you three things. So the first one is that clarity equals success. And I think that can be really, really hard when you are a new entrepreneur or a person who is starting a business and you see lots of marketing all the time, either on TV or radio or social media, like it's everywhere. And you can kind of get this idea in your head that you need to do what you're seeing. You need to be doing what other people are doing, especially on social media. And that's not always the case. So I say that clarity equals success. And what you need to do there is know your goal and know your audience. If you're trying to grow your business, you need to know what you need to sell and who you need to sell it to. And then what your marketing needs to relate specifically to that. So you can do like a lot of the types of marketing that we see anymore is brand building marketing. And that seems to be where a lot of people spend a lot of time, is building their brand. And it's easy to get sucked in to doing almost exclusively that when you start posting on social media and stuff like that. But really focusing on knowing who your audience is and what your goal is. If your goal is to impact people by telling them your opinion, great. You can do a lot of that brand building stuff. If that's not your goal, if your goal is to sell so many shares of beef or build your CSA following or something like that, then you need to know that's what you need to focus on creating your content around, making your messaging about. So that's the first one. The second one I would say is the best type of marketing is the marketing that gets done. It's the marketing that was completed, that got posted, that got done, was crossed off your list, however you want to say it. If it doesn't happen, if it spends all of the time in your head or your idea list or your, oh, I would do it, but I don't have the right type of camera, or I don't have, the sun's not out today, so I can't take that picture, you know, stuff like that, then you're not doing marketing. And that's the worst kind of marketing you can do, is zero. So even if it's not perfect, getting it done is the best type of marketing that you can do. So kind of just releasing some of those expectations about yourself. Nobody expects most farm entrepreneurs to have a beautifully aesthetic Instagram feed. Like, just do the best you can with what you have. And then the third one I would say is try to make your marketing part of your daily routine. This is the best thing for time efficiency that you can do. So a lot of things that we do in marketing now revolve around video, because video is God online anymore. So getting that video content can be really challenging. But if you try to work it into your daily routine, it gets a lot more manageable. So grab a tripod. They're like $15 on Amazon, which, not trying to support Amazon, but everybody has access to that.
It'll ship to your farm, so we know that.
Yeah. Grab a tripod, put your phone on a tripod, and film yourself doing your chores. Film yourself making your coffee in the morning. Film whatever it is that you're doing in your day, and you'll start to like recognize patterns and things that you can consistently do. And even if all you're doing is posting that you're feeding your cows every day, people start to enjoy that and see the repetition and start to expect it from you. And you're going to find ways to work it into your content. And then you have assets to work with. That's the most challenging part when you're getting started marketing is you have a blank slate. What do you do? So getting started filming some of those things that you're just doing in your everyday life, maybe tying some of your habits about when you do your marketing to things you're already doing. So if you're going to go milk the cows, know that, okay, right when I'm done milking cows, I'm going to make this post on Facebook and I'm going to do that every Tuesday or whatever it looks like. Building those habits that tie to your daily routine and then getting those assets from your daily routine is a great place to get started.
So, Lexi, I'm going to add another question in here. I'm going to like sneak attack of Arlene's question list. I frequent a lot of craft forums. I'm crocheting right now. I'm not just like never making eye contact. There's a lot of folks on social media who go from being authentic and vulnerable with their audience to it is your responsibility to save me. You have to spend money with me and only with me. Everyone is mean to me. If you don't fix this for me, my life will be ruined. And it gets very like, I don't want to buy anything from you because it's just so negative. And so this is your problem, where realistically, you're the one who started the business. It is your business. You're the one who makes the money from it. Where is that line between, you know, especially I think with farming and with kids, like we're trying to be very vulnerable and open, but also nobody wants to go on and be like, a shitload of our sheep have died this week or whatever. You know, like nobody wants to be that person either.
It is a difficult line to find, especially in farming, I feel like, because we encounter a lot more of that stuff than the average person, of those things that are kind of out of our control that just you walk out there and it smacks you in the face and it's like, okay, this is what we're doing today. So it is a difficult line to walk, but I think remembering that, again, you are promoting or marketing your business for a reason, for a goal, to an audience that you need to understand what they know and what they want. Those kinds of marketing tactics of like, you have to save me and desperation, they work for a short time. They work for a short time, but they do not, they're not a long-term plan. So you have to recognize, I think, you know, is this a business that I intend to keep and have for years to come? Or am I just trying to get to the end of the month? So that line, I think the best way to know when you are or aren't crossing it is to remember that most people consider marketing to be a form of entertainment. Most marketing platforms that we have intersect with places that we go for entertainment, whether that's the radio, whether that's a sporting event, television programming, social media, whatever it is. Most people are going there for entertainment. They want to be entertained. So if you want your marketing to be successful, it needs to include some level of entertainment. And that can sometimes be vulnerability. Unfortunately, that is entertainment. That's how people connect. It can be the vulnerability. It can be unique copy. It can be creative assets and video, and like it can be all these different things, but at the end of the day, that is why people are paying attention to what you're doing. Once they are not entertained by whatever ploy or whatever negativity you have going on at the moment, then that piece of your marketing is going to be over. And I think it's hard because a lot of people do get desperate, especially as like growing entrepreneurs trying to make it work, or they have a big goal to leave their full-time job and make this their full-time thing. It's easy to fall into that desperation. But remembering that it's a mindset as well of when you are not putting out desperate vibes into the world, not to sound like a total Gen Z, but when you're putting out desperation into the world, that's what you're going to receive back. The people that are going to align with the things that you're sharing are going to be desperate people. So when you are leaning into your creativity and the things that you do well and that you actually built your business on and feeling joy around those things, then those are the types of people you're going to attract with that type of marketing. So hopefully that answered your question. That's kind of how I approach it.
That makes a lot of sense.
It seems like there's always those folks who thrive on the drama, but I don't really want to be surrounded by them either as customers. You know, it doesn't seem fun.
So I'm going to pull us back towards some of the our usual parenting kind of questions. And often we ask people about that transition from zero kids to one, because that seems like a, you know, like the biggest life switch. But do you, when you're reflecting back, and I mean, for you, you've got four kids, but in a short amount of time, what that first transition was like, and then your the transitions after that, as you built your family, where were kind of those points where you, I mean, we were talking about vulnerability, places where you struggled and places where you kind of felt like you hit your stride too.
Yeah. My first was both a difficult and a not difficult transition at the same time. It was difficult because I was working an office job at the time. We had a very small piece of land that we were trying to get started farming and growing our farm on. And we really just, like, we were young. We had been married less than a year when my first son was born. And so we were just kind of trying to get our grips on what direction we were headed in life. And he was a tough baby. He cried all the time, all the time. I took a 6-week maternity leave and then he went to daycare, and that was rough. I would say that was the hardest part, was going back to work and trying to be like, okay, I don't know what this means for my future of, I feel like really called to be with my son, but all the, at the same time, like, I am not going to do any better of a job of getting him to stop crying than the babysitter is, and trying to figure out what that looked like. So that part was hard. I would say that we really, like, we knew we wanted to have a big family, or a big for us family, from the get-go. So we knew that we were going to be expanding our family soon. It was kind of like a learning process of, okay, what does being a mom look like? And what is this going to be? I don't think that the first one honestly was the hardest for me. I think it was the last one, the transition from 3 to 4. My first two boys were very easygoing, and they honestly have very complementary personalities. They don't fight unless one of them is wrestling and punches a little too hard or something like that. But
so once the first one got out of his crying stage, then he he got better from there.
He did. Yeah. It was honestly when he started to crawl, when he could move himself, he was a much happier baby. Oh my word. It was like night and day difference. You asking that, it makes me remember those early days of, like, I would get up, I had a 35 or 40 minute commute to work, and I'd drop him off at daycare on the way. And then I'd go to work and I'd like try to pump at work. And that did not go very well for me with my first one either. So that was stressful. And then I'd come pick him up on my way back home. And then he would just like want to nurse the entire evening, and be comforted from that. And so I would just sit in the recliner and feel like I was chained to the chair from like 6 PM to 9 PM. And, so that was hard, but it was a short time. Like, it was the first 6 months, and he got so much happier after that. And then he's been a really, honestly, easy kid ever since. But going from 2 to 3 was hard because then we were outnumbered and they were all young. We went to a wedding maybe a couple weeks after my third was born. And so we had like a 2.5-year-old, a 1.5-year-old, and a newborn. And gosh, that was a bad decision.
I'm impressed you were able to leave the house at all, much less a wedding where you actually have to like put on nice clothes.
Yeah, it was a poor choice on our part, but we had fun. It was short-lived. I think we went to the ceremony in like 20 minutes of the reception, they were like, okay, we are exhausted.
Wait, you took them to the ceremony willingly?
We did. It was outdoors, so that helped. And it was a close friend of mine from college and high school.
Yeah, there are some weddings you can't really skip. So yeah, you got it.
So we did. We made it work. It went fine. We have kind of made a trend out of taking our babies to weddings. We took my oldest one to a wedding when he was 4 days old because my husband was in the wedding. That was a little bit of a push.
Yeah, you've got me beat because my first was 5 days old at her first wedding. So yeah, you got me by a day.
But yeah, and then so my third, she's got a little bit of a strong-willed personality, and that was very evident with her from a young age. So that was a little bit of a bigger transition to go from 2 to 3 and then 3 to 4. That girl, she's been walking since she was 7.5 months old. And so the fact that she was on the run just from such a young age, she, I was at a very, I would say, pivotal point in my business growing at that point when she was young. I was stressed about clients who were signing on or canceling. It was like kind of this up-leveling stage where I was hiring employees and it's like, oh, is all of this going to make sense and work out? So I was more stressed postpartum with her than any of the others. And then the fact that she just got on the move so quick and she would walk out of our back door. I had to put Christmas like jingle bells on our door so that I would hear if she went outside, because she would just go right outside and our cow pen was like, I don't know, 50 feet from our back door. She'd just go start climbing the gates. Like, oh, that girl's going to give me so many gray hairs. But she was the hardest transition for us. And I think it was mostly because of the stage of life that I was at when that happened. She's a girl who knows what she wants as well. So that makes it a little challenging.
So I'm also a parent of 4, and you've already kind of been talking about the different personalities, but how do you try to manage all the different personalities and needs in your house, especially when some of them are more insistent or more determined, and other ones maybe a bit more meek and mild? But how do you make it all work with trying to be, I know we can never be fair, but to make sure that everyone gets what they need?
Yeah, it's definitely hard for the competing attention. And you want to try to give all of them the individualized things that they need, but sometimes there's just not enough hours in the day to make that work. So my husband and I definitely feel the pressure of that. And sometimes it's like you really feel like you let down one of your kids on a particular day. But we try to just really pay attention to what they're interested in and feed into that, not what we want them to be interested in. And that has helped, I think. The other thing I think that we really try to do is simplify the things that we can simplify so that we can just, you know, lean into what works for them and what their personality is. So I used to say that I would never buy individually packaged snacks because obviously they are much more costly than the bulk bags.
I remember having said that myself too.
Yeah. Gosh darn it. I keep Sam's Club in business buying those giant packages of 50 bags of Cheetos because that's what keeps them happy and that's what makes things a little simpler. So we just get a couple more minutes to spend, you know, connecting with them, asking them about their day instead of worrying about how to divvy up a bag of Cheetos.
That is totally fair. Yeah. I used to be more of the, oh, it creates so much garbage. But when I'm packing lunches in the morning, it's so much easier to sometimes just grab a few packages of things and then you know they're nut free and, you know, allergen free and they can safely go to school. So there they go.
Yeah.
Lexi, I will admit that I was also that mom that was like, No, of course I'll make all my own baby food and individually package raisins or whatever. And now I'm like, you know, if individually like single wrapped goldfish would help my child chill the fuck out some days, I'd do it. I'd be the first one in line, like, bring it, you know.
Can they open the package themselves? I will buy it.
Oh my God. Can they open the package themselves? Right.
If they could figure that out to make that packaging more child friendly, that'd be great.
I don't get it because my kids could break into Fort Knox, like no problem. But you give them a yogurt or an applesauce pouch or God forbid a package of crackers and they're just like, what is this sorcery? You can't really expect us to do this.
Or even the straw in a drinking box. Why are they so complicated?
Looking at you, Capri Sun. Looking at you.
That is definitely, I think, something we have a lot of room to grow on, though. And that's something we've been working on is trying, like, as our kids get older, to spend more one-on-one time with them when we can and more individualized things. And it's hard. The thing we're looking forward to the most right now, I would say, is house renovations so that they can have more space. My older two definitely crave separation from their younger sisters. And that's just not something they have a whole lot of right now. So getting some of those house renovations done will help us.
Yes, having a safe place to play Lego was a big thing when we moved to the farmhouse. Having the older ones could safely play with their Lego and not have it immediately destroyed by a toddler was huge. So you have lived on different pieces of property, but it's always been farm-ish, and now you're on the family farm. What is your favorite part of raising kids on the farm?
I just love the way that their faces light up when they like get to do something that is actually helpful. And they know if you're giving them a busy work job to keep them busy or if they're actually doing something that helps you. And when they take an interest in it, it doesn't always happen. Like sometimes, you know, they're like, I don't want to do this or I want to go inside or whatever and whiny. But the days that they are engaged and they want to help and they find something that they can like actually accomplish, you just see it connect in their eyes that they did something that was good and that was like purposeful. And that's, I love that. My son, my oldest one, he gave our dairy bottle calf a bottle the other day for the first time. And he loved it. I think he's given bottles to beef calves before, like he's had to help with that. But the dairy calf's a little more puppy-like than some of the beef bottle calves are. And so he thought that was just such an exciting thing to get to help. And like, I give that calf 3 bottles a day. And so the fact that he could go give her one, I think he felt like he was really making a difference. So that's my favorite part.
He's a farmer now.
Yeah. and them just getting to explore. Our farm is on a creek. And the fact that they can just like go traipse through the woods and have different hideouts and spend time outside doing literally whatever they want is irreplaceable for a little kid, I think.
Mm-hmm, for sure. What is your biggest parenting struggle these days? It doesn't have to be farm related, but yeah, either connected to the farm or just family life in general.
I would say the biggest parenting struggle we have always had continues to be the biggest struggle, and that is sleep. All of my kids have been challenging sleepers. My second was the easiest one, and even he's not great. But we just don't have a good setup and never have for getting, like, I feel like I need to lock all my kids in different rooms by themselves in a completely dark room with a sound machine.
Yeah, with white noise everywhere.
Yeah. And even then I'm like, I don't know if that would work. But as it is right now, like they wake each other up in the middle of the night and it's just nobody sleeps. So that's always been a challenge for us. And I post about it sometimes, like, people that have kids that sleep don't get it. They're like, just do this. I'm like, I have tried. I have tried every single one of these things and they don't work for us. Some kids just don't sleep. And that's a problem that is not really solvable for us at this point. And that's okay. Like, I'll never forget when I had an office job and my youngest, and he wasn't sleeping, like he was waking up every hour of the night. One of my coworkers said, well, what are you going to do about that? I'm like, F if I know, like, I don't know what I'm going to do about it.
I guess I'll just keep waking up.
Yeah. Like, we're trying to figure this out. It's not working. But so, yeah, sleep continues to be a big thing for us. And anybody who goes through like severe sleep, I can't even think of the word.
Torture. It's torture.
Yeah. Knows what I mean. Like, it's I sometimes struggle with it, even like I just did there. I really think lack of sleep sometimes makes me forget words. Like I can't think as clearly as I used to. And so that's kind of like hard in work situations sometimes. But we're just taking it one day at a time, trying to do the best we can. That's really all I can do at this point with that.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like a lack of sleep does impact every part of your life, right? Like it is necessary. And all those, you know, the articles you read about, oh, well, you know, good health, you know, sleep hygiene and stuff. It's like, well, that's nice. But could you tell the rest of the people in my house that they also need to sleep in order for me to get a good rest? Like it's easy to say, but yeah, it's so hard to do.
I have to say that's the part that kills me about people who say things like, well, what are you going to do about it? Or, you know, here, I sent you this helpful article and it's like, I'm not actually just too stupid to know that sleep is an important thing. It had just never occurred to me that sleeping might help. Thanks.
I'll just explain to my 2-year-old that sleep is important and then she'll sleep. That's how easy it is, right? Yeah,
she just doesn't understand. I'm sure logic will help with my 2-year-old. Right. All right. So, Lexi, we ask all of our guests, if you were going to dominate a category at the county fair, what would it be? And categories can be real or made up.
Okay. So I would dominate, this is embarrassing, but I would dominate the category of being able to fill up the counter with dirty dishes the fastest and then figure out the Tetris style to put them together so I can fit more on the counter before I actually wash them. And then I Tetris them into the drying rack.
So you don't actually have to hand dry anything. I like that. Yeah.
Yes. So I can make a massive load of dishes all at once.
Challenge accepted. How bad does it make your eye twitch when people stack things like, you know, a plate and then a bowl and then another plate and then a cup? It's stressing me out just thinking about it.
Yeah. You know, if they can get it to balance like that and fit more dishes, cool. Like I'm for it, but
it's the fitting more dishes.
That is the key. Yes. We don't have a dishwasher here yet. And I never realized how much I loved our old dishwasher, but yeah, I do really enjoy cooking. And so anytime that I cook, it's just like our kitchen gets completely trashed in a couple hours and then you're like, well, I need to cook supper, but all the dishes are dirty. Dang it.
What can I make with this pot that I haven't used yet? Yeah.
Yep.
Sounds familiar. So we will go ahead and move into our cussing and discussing segment. So listeners, you know, you can send your cussing and discussing into our SpeakPipe or email. You can find those links in the show notes. Katie, what are you cussing and or discussing this week?
I'm going to say, and I know a lot of people are horrified by words that their kids pick up from YouTube, which is valid. It kills me that my whitest little white bread kindergartner and first grader farm kids are saying bruh and sick, as in my daughter saying, those Band-Aids are sick, mom. And then them explaining it to me. Because I am clearly so uncool, that I will not know, not sick. And just honestly having my 6-year-old call me bruh. I mean, I guess he's still 5. He's not even 6 yet. It just kills me. I don't know why I find it so funny, but I do. Anyway, Lexi, what do you have to cuss and discuss this week?
Well, I kind of took like a serious direction here, and this is like my constant one. If I had to pick one that I would always cuss and discuss, it would be this one. It is the fact that in agriculture, we seem to have like this archetype of farmers who we think are better than others. And if you are a hobby farmer or a homesteader or a small farmer, even if you're trying to grow or get started, that some people just are always going to look down on those types of farmers and put them at a disadvantage. That's my things that I will cuss until the end of time. I wish people realized like every farm that is any sizable size now started out as what those hobby farmers or homesteaders were. Like that is what your great-great-grandparents did. So please stop trying to put them down.
Absolutely. And the work and the passion and the enthusiasm that people have is not defined by how many acres or how many head of whatever they have. So it really, yeah, it really doesn't matter where you started or where you're going. And if you want to stay small, that's also okay. That idea that everyone has to get bigger to be better, that's also a really toxic, because the only way that works is for other farms to cease operation. So, I mean, that's shouldn't really be our goal. We should be happy when other people come into the industry.
Arlene, what do you have to cuss and discuss today?
I'm going to go on a lighter note. Weird kid obsessions. My youngest has been enthralled with the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory movies, both the Johnny Depp and the OG version. And the fact that there was a new one this year, like the new Wonka movie, we had to go and see that in theaters. And it just brought it all back. You know, when kids are really like, when he was in that 4 or 5 range, he only wanted to watch Willy Wonka on repeat. And thankfully there were 2 versions. So you could watch one and then you could watch the other. But that was like the only thing he ever wanted to watch. And he kind of got out of it a bit. But then when the new Wonka movie came back out, then we're like back right into it. And I just think it's delightful when kids are like obsessed with random things. And I mean, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is a pretty good thing to be obsessed with. So that's kind of fun. Kids are weird, but I love it. I guess people are weird. We're all obsessed with weird things.
Kids are really weird though.
We just learn to hide our weirdness a little bit better as we grow up, maybe. So thank you, Lexi. We didn't even mention that Lexi also has her own podcast, so you can go and listen to her podcast too. So maybe while you are giving our listeners where to find you, you can also tell them where to find your podcast so they can hear more about you and your guests.
Yeah, absolutely. My website is backpocketsocial.com, and that is my marketing business. And currently my podcast is also housed there, but I'm getting ready to divide the two. Major website project I need to get done. My podcast is Farming on Purpose, and you can find it anywhere you listen to podcasts. It's also on Instagram as at Farming on Purpose. And yeah, that's probably the easiest place to find me is just backpocketsocial.com. All my social media links are there and podcast is there. So that's where you go.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you today.
Thank you guys.
Thanks for coming on, Lexi.
Thank you for joining us on Barnyard Language. If you enjoy the show, please support us on Patreon with a donation.
Big thanks go out to our show editor, Krista Paffrath, at the Rural Podcast Network.
Please rate and review the podcast wherever you listen and follow the show so you never miss an episode.
If you want to connect with other farming families, join the private Barnyard Language Facebook group.
We are always in search of future guests for the podcast. If you or someone you know would like to chat with us, get in touch.